In this week's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with Dr. Torkil Ferru about how to use wearables for optimal health. Dr. Ferru and I speak about how heart rate reveals the state of our health, how smartwatches can guide our stress levels, top strategies to expand our health and lifespan, and more. I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Dr. Ferru, and please, if you enjoy this show, give us a rating or subscribe and take a screenshot, share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. Now on to my conversation with Dr. Ferru. Hello and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Torkil Ferru, photographer and author of the book, The Pulse Cure. Torkil, welcome to the show. I'm super excited to speak with you today.
Thank you, Lisa. Very nice to talk to you.
Torkil and I are going to be talking obviously about his book today, but more specifically about how heart rate monitors and or phones can help us get to know our body better and can help us gain control of stress and in general our autonomic nervous system. But before we get into that, I would just love to hear a little bit about your background, your education, and just in general what caused you to write The Pulse Cure.
Yeah, I'm a Norwegian general practitioner, normal doctor working in the emergency department most of the time, all around Norway. So I'm kind of a free, I've always been for 25 years a freelance doctor, locum doctor, it's called in some places, where I work all over Norway, usually 24/7 for a week or two in the districts where they have to have a doctor on call at around the clock. So I've seen 50,000 different patients through that time. So that would be 1% of Norway's population that I've examined and listened to and trying to find out what's wrong with them and find a cure for them. So that's kind of being on the front row of the panorama of diseases and what makes you sick and what makes you healthy and so on. And I myself was not living a very healthy lifestyle until 10 years ago when my father died of cancer. I started looking at my lifestyle and I saw that there was a lot to improve. So I was weighing 20 kilos or 40 pounds overweight. I didn't exercise. I didn't care much about sleep and nutrition and all those important things that we now know is so important. But earlier, 10, 15 years ago, it was not so much talked about lifestyle changes in medicine. We were mainly focused on the different pills you can take and so on. So, and maybe we thought that if you did everything right, you would live for 2 or 3 years longer, but it would take you 2 or 3 years to do that. So why bother, Now, of course, we know that it's like 20, 24 years to be gained from having the good lifestyle. And anyway, I changed my lifestyle around, started exercising and doing all the good stuff. And the last 5 years, I've been using wearables like Garmin watches and Oura rings and different trackers to help me modulate my autonomic nervous system and physiology. And the reason why we can do that is that the heart is so responsive to everything that happens in your body. So before you notice it, the heart will change its rhythm accordingly to what is stressing you or the load on your system. So, I've just learned more and more about the importance of the autonomic nervous system, the vagus nerve, having enough restorative time, being in balance, and finding this balance. And I've found that the wearables is such an important tool that we can have ourselves to gain more control of our health, to be kind of CEOs of our own health, so to speak. So that was a little bit about my background. And of course, this book in Norway has been just a huge, enormous success. It's been on the bestseller list now for more than a year and a half. And it's kind of changed the way so many Norwegians look at health, that they can do so much to get healthier and take charge of their health. So, and now it's been translated into English. It's Danish, Swedish, Dutch, Polish, Italian, and so on. So, The last year and a half has just been like in a being in a tornado, so I don't have so much time for patient work now. I have to do it, quite often. But the last year and a half has been like a very different lifestyle for a normal doctor like me.
Well, I guess that's a luxury problem. Hopefully, I think you regard it as that way. And I mean, speaking about the perception of things, because of course, everything is always can be good or bad depending on how we look at it. And I think that is a nice transition into stress, because stress itself, it has gotten a little bit of a negative connotation. We're always like, oh my gosh, I'm so stressed. But you and I both know that without some sort of stressors, we can't live, we can't evolve, we can't better ourselves. But of course, it is about finding that sweet spot of how much stress, and like you said, making sure we are making time for switching into that parasympathetic nervous system state, or just in general, also making time to decompress. So, in the Pulse Cure, or even just with your own method, how do you advise people go about managing their stress? Because of course, we also don't want to look at our wearables and just thinking, oh no, my heart rate, it is up, I need to just sit down and do nothing now. So how can we get a better heart rate variability? So meaning up high and low and in the right measure.
Yeah, so the key to getting a better heart rate variability, that is to have a good nutrition, to eat the right food, to have the right amount of exercise, not too little and not too much either, to stay away from alcohol as much as you can, really. Unfortunately for me, I used to love having a couple of drinks every day. Staying away from nicotine, of course, smoking and tobacco and so on, and in general, having a way to calm yourself down, to whether it's breath work or meditation or reading or relaxing in some way, would be a great thing. Make sure that you get enough sunshine, actually, and earthing, contact with the earth. There's so many things that once you start tracking, you can see the connection to the heart rate. Yeah, that's just some of the things that that you need to do. Of course, make sure that you get good enough sleep, that you allow your body to get the recovery during the sleep time, and that is very, very helpful with the wearables. And all of these things you can kind of micromanage as much as you want. You know, if you have an Oura ring that you have had, then you get some insight into how your nervous system works. But if you have a Garmin watch, which is presently the best choice, then you can see throughout the day and you can pinpoint, okay, that was my trouble. The chili meal was the reason why I'm so stressed today, you know, like because I can see it started at 7 o'clock, you know, for example. So you can kind of, when you use the right devices, it's like being in your car and you see your physiological speed on your speedometer at your wrist at all times. And of course, in the beginning, it can be a bit stressful. Suddenly, you get a window into your own system, and that can be both interesting and probably stressful for some. But anyway, you get the access to the dashboard like you have in your car. You can see your speed, you can see how much is left on the gas or electricity if you have an electric car. And it's the same way with our body. And for so many people that are on the verge of burnout, you know, that's such a big issue. Probably, I'm not sure in Colombia or where you are at now, but in Norway and Western Europe and the US, burnout is affecting more or less half of the employees. So it's a big thing. And this is probably the best instrument to be able to avoid getting into a burnout situation. And that is why it's been so successful in Norway, because so many people in this situation has found a solution to regulate their speed, because you discover so many things that you would never think is stressing you, like food. You know, I would never have thought that food is a stressor, but of course that's one of the first things you see when you start tracking your system.
Super interesting. And I love the idea of just looking at these devices as more of a form of prevention for anything. I also work with a lot of active people and person people that are performance oriented and so on. So in those cases, I believe most people acquire a wearable more for the sense of how hard can I train today or how good is my recovery. But of course, for the everyday person, it is even just good to see that, hey, that argument that I had with my spouse was really stressful, actually. It also caused me to have very poor sleep. And sleep was the main reason why I initially got an Oura Ring, because I really wanted to see if I'm really going, if I'm going through all the stages of sleep. So I would love to know your opinion on, well, A, the reliability of the wearables when it comes to sleep stages, and if that's even something that's worth paying attention to, as opposed to just the duration. And you also mentioned that you at the moment believe the Garmin is the most reliable or most useful one. Would you put that above the Oura and something like a Whoop, because those are the two most popular ones that I have encountered?
Yeah, I've also used the Whoop band for maybe 3 years. I just recently took it off, waiting for the Whoop 5 that probably coming at some time. Yeah, the sleep phases are important, and the Oura Ring is the best one for that. So that is why I still wear an Oura Ring, even if I do most of my attention is on the Garmin watch. And the Oura Ring would probably have an accuracy of around 80%, which doesn't sound very good. But even sleep expert would not be able to agree on more than maybe 85% of the sleep phases, because it's not like clear cut that you're going from one phase to the other. So 80% is as good as it gets. So I keep the Oura Ring for the sleep measurements. But to find out what affects the sleep, then Garmin is by far the best choice. And it's not just because the Garmin watch is accurate in itself, but they have acquired the algorithms of First Beat Analytics, a Finnish company that has been doing physiological readings for more than 20 years. So it's the package deal there that makes it so efficient that you can see the stress level in the moment. You can just push a button, you see the stress level, you're able to mitigate it. Say if you're in a meeting and you feel stressed and annoyed by something, and you see that, oh wow, my stress is 75. Okay, I can do some breathing, I can relax, try to calm myself down, and so on. So you get a glimpse of the speedometer as you go. And you will have the body battery system that will give a measurement of how well are you rested in the morning? How much energy do you have? And so you can see your energy levels. And I think that's very accurate. Maybe not like it could probably be, if you had an ECG monitor, it would be more accurate, but it's more than accurate enough for daily living. And as you say, these instruments has often been developed by athletes. And that's a good thing, that the athletes that are kind of pushing the envelope, that what they find out, we all of us can use it as well. It's like in the race car industry, the people in the Formula One race cars, they find innovations that kind of trickles down to normal cars. And it's just like this with these wearables. And what they often the athletes are mistaken about, they often use the wearables to track the intensity of their sessions. But that's just a little part of it. It's much more important to find out how are you doing outside the sessions, your training sessions. Because what you eat, if you drink alcohol, if you use the nicotine, if you have a period, if you have PMS, for example, the symptoms, then you need to adjust your intensity when you're exercising. To see that you get enough recovery. Like Ronaldo, he uses the soccer player uses the Whoop band. So he says it's like having a doctor on his wrist. And I agree with him on that. It's so important to see the whole picture. So maybe you have a stressful period at work, and then you should downregulate the intensity when you're exercising. So, and also, of course, the wearables can often give you the VO2 max, which is also very important to be able to know how intense can you train.
Yeah, that's a really really good point. And like I said, also in terms of athletes using that device, I do think the Garmin is probably, or also from my knowledge, is definitely, when it comes to training, the most accurate one. I will have to say that when it comes to when I used my Aura, it was not very accurate at all when it came to like picking up on what I was doing in terms of training. Like, I would be lifting weights heavy and it was like, are you going for a walk or something like that? So that was one thing that bothered me a little bit, but I do think the Garmin is much, much better at probably, and we do, I think many studies show that those wearables are not quite there yet when it comes to picking up on calories burned. So I personally don't advise clients or anyone listening looking at, oh, how much did I burn today? I need to burn as much as possible with, and looking at my wearable. I think that also leads to a very unhealthy relationship with food. I don't know what your view is on that.
I'm not looking at that at all. I've never done that. So I agree with you. I don't think it will be an accurate amount, or I'm not sure. It's not my focus anyway. I don't think the calories burning is so important. But maybe for an athlete, it should be. And on if you exercise hard, vigorously, then you would need a chest strap. Then often the watches itself will not show the right heart rate.
That's a very good point. So, for anyone listening, or just in general, I mean, most of us have a stressful life. We have a full-time job, we have things in family, social commitments, whatever. So what would be a trend where you would say to that person, hey, pay attention, you're heading towards burnout? Because I think if we don't have the wearables, sometimes we think, oh, it's just, I'll get through this. This is just Christmas time. It's just busy. It's always busy, blah, 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 blah. And before we know, it adds up and adds up and adds up. And then bam, you're there. You have burnout, or you just in general super stressed and affecting your hormones and everything else. What would be some first indicators where we can pull back?
I think the wearables would warn you way before you get into that situation. That's my experience. That they would say that, okay, you need to relax. They will tell you from the artificial intelligence, from what they see from your watch, they will give you an answer that this is too hard. You can see on the heart rate variability over time that it goes down. Then you will be advised to do something about it. And you can, of course, see it yourself. You don't really need the artificial intelligence. You can use your own intelligence to see that my HRV curve is going dropping sharply here. And you will find some, and everybody finds some surprises from what will relax them and strain them. And the most important is to take away the unnecessary stress. The stress it just depletes you of energy and don't provide any advantage in the long run. Of course, exercising, doing hard things, having lectures, you're supposed to stress. You're supposed to put loads on your system, both mentally and physically. But you don't want to waste your energy. So that is why it's so important for athletes to have control of this, so that they use their energy on the recovery and getting stronger, and not on alcohol or food that they can't tolerate. So many people find out by their heart rate that they have food intolerances. Because if you cannot tolerate gluten, your heart rate will go up once you eat it. You will see the answer, and probably before you feel it yourself. There's been so many people then who have seen from their stress levels that they have kind of done everything in the book, followed every advice, and they still see that the stress level is high. And then very often it's because of a food intolerance that they couldn't discover. Maybe it's a mix of intolerances that they have just gotten used to have this level of energy, so they didn't know that there's another energy level that they can have. And then they tell me on Instagram and so on that the symptoms that they had for 20, 30 years has just vanished, with muscle aches and headaches and migraines and all of this.
What a beautiful testament. No, that's That's amazing. And I can absolutely see how like intolerances, but also just overall foods that spike our insulin a lot. So let's just say we have a huge, super carb heavy meal and no healthy fats or no protein in there. And then bam, your glucose, blood glucose goes up. And obviously that's reflected in the heart rate. So it will be interesting. I don't know if you have done that or worked with that. Also having a wearable in conjunction with a continuous blood glucose monitor. Is that something that you're looking into?
I've done that, and it often reacts to sugar, but often it's a combination. So often the sugar in itself is not necessarily giving stress, but often the sugar in particularly packaged in processed food, that often gives a very high stress. And then, of course, it's so much easier to be motivated to do the right choices, that you don't have that this big bag of crisps in the evening when you see that the stress lasts until 4 o'clock at night and so on. And then you skip the candy and chocolate and everything when you see the physiological price of it. So I think having a CGM for some time is also really important. Everybody should have that. Everybody should have 1 month with a continuous glucose monitor to see how their body reacts to sugar, because that can also be very different. It's not only food, stress can affect your blood sugar, sleep can affect your blood sugar. So I think it's so much easier, and it seems that everything that is good for us will show in the heart rate, and whatever is good for us is to live a little bit more like how we lived in evolutionary times, like 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. Whatever approaches that lifestyle is also healthy for us, and it will also see the response in the heart rate.
I mean, I personally have the fortune to be living close to the equator, so sunlight doesn't change much for me. But for someone like you, very far up in the north, what do you advise your clients, or just in general, to get that daylight exposure, or to be alert in the morning to improve their sleep, which I'm sure they struggle with in winter and in summer when it's very bright for a lot of the day.
Yeah, in general, it's good to get sunlight early in the morning to set your circadian rhythm so that you get the boost of melatonin in the right time before you go to sleep in the evening. And of course, parts of the year, we don't get enough sunlight here. And even with our indoor lifestyle, even in the summer, and people are scared of the sun, using sunscreen all the time. And that is really not healthy. A big Swedish research shows that it's as dangerous not to get sun as it is to smoke, actually. So it's the sunshine and the fear of sunshine, I think it's been a really big mistake that the health industry has been doing, oops, sorry, has been doing. So I think getting enough sunlight is really, really important, and without the sunscreen.
Yeah, I think that would have been one of the first great recommendations. Once the pandemic hit, it would have been nice to just have some basic recommendations like that, as in people go outside, get healthier that way, as opposed to stay in your apartments for however long and don't speak to anybody, don't have social connections. Now we're all a little bit smarter, and hopefully all a little bit smarter, and know that there would have been some better methods. But yeah, I thought that during that time, I heard numerous times that people were saying my Oura or whatever. Whatever wearable that they had was telling them that they were going to get sick, so with COVID or whatever, before they even felt anything. Like their aura said to them, like, oh, careful, your recovery rate is like really, really down the drain. And they thought, this thing has to be broken. I'm feeling great. And then 2 days later, bam.
The heart rate responds very quickly to an infection before you feel the symptoms yourself. And what is just as important is that you can see on the heart rate variability the amount of stress that disease puts on your system, so that it's much easier to find out, and also with a discussion with your doctor, when should you go back to work? And if you go back to work, you can see the response from your heart. And then see if it was too early or not, or the job was too hard. So And a lot of the fatigue, the problem with fatigue is that it doesn't show in our normal lab tests. It only shows in the strain on the body through the heart rate. So, and I can, you haven't been talking about what heart rate variability is, and maybe not everybody knows that. And even I, as a doctor, did not, I never heard of the expression until 5 years ago. So I don't blame anyone for not understanding what heart rate variability is. But heart rate variability is the variation between heartbeats on in-breath and out-breath. So if you have a good heart rate variability and you are in the parasympathetic mode, then when you breathe in, the heart rate goes up a little bit. There's more oxygen in the lungs. It pushes through a bit faster. And then as you breathe out, there's less oxygen in the lungs. Your heart rate slows out down a little bit. To save some power, just measured in milliseconds. But if you're in the stress state, then the heart rate will beat at a very steady pace, regardless of you breathing in or out. So it's like your system senses that there's a dangerous situation. We need to use all available forces now. So and then the wearables can pick up this and see that, and they will see it long before you do, because we have never needed this sense of our inner state. The noise from this inner state would just have been in the way of interpreting outside signals from where the threats came like through all the millions of years. So we have excellent eyesight. We can see 10 million colors. We can smell a trillion different smells, and hear, a bird singing far, far away. But whether you have 60 or 80 or 90 in the heart rate while you are living your life, you have no idea. So that just shows how much stress you can have before you feel it. When you feel stressed, then you are really stressed. So this is how it's kind of a substitution of a sense that we never needed to de develop. And that is why it can be so helpful for people to be able to regulate their intensity of their lives.
Very interesting way to put it, and yeah, I never thought of it as an extra sort of sense to be able to sense at what heart rate I'm operating at the moment. I would just love to hear in the PulseCure, what are some like takeaways that you give the readers in the sense of lifestyle things that they can do? And I'm sure, I mean, we've touched on a few with nutrition and sleep, but like really practical, let's go really practical in the sense of what they can implement, or if they're currently really not doing any mindfulness practice or any stillness practice or whatever, how can they start incorporating those great things?
Yeah, we can start with I've divided the PulseCure into expedition stages, because it's an expedition. It's hard. You have to concentrate and do struggle a bit to get the good lifestyle. It's not easy. If it was easy, everybody would be fit. Everybody would be sleeping and being strong and running a marathon. But it is hard. And the first stage is to get your sleep in order. To make sure that you get 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night, and that is restorative. And what can help there is to relax the last 1 to 2 hours before you go to bed, dim the lights or put blue blocking glasses on, keep your bedroom dark, really dark and cool. And make sure that you try to go to bed and wake up at the same time every day. To have some sleep, a good sleep consistency. And of course, unfortunately, in the Western world, 20% of the population will work night shifts or evening shifts and have their circadian rhythm disturbed. And that is really, really not good. And it's actually dangerous to your health. So that's sleep. And then with nutrition, try to do some fasting, maybe 1 or 2 days of fasting, maybe more. But at least try to have the night fast longer. It's not good to eat an early breakfast and keep eating throughout the day. That often people have been advised from their doctors, but that's not healthy. So to try to have an eating window of maybe 8 hours, and then maybe 16 hours of rest for your intestinal system, that really needs a long time to. It's estimated that around 10% of your cells in your intestinal system needs to be replenished or repaired every day. And it needs time to do that. You cannot just fill up in more food and expect it to do that job. To extend the night fast, it will be very, very good for so many people. And when you see it on the watch that the fasting is good, then it's more motivating. I was really shocked the first time when I was fasting because I was expecting, because it felt really unpleasant. I felt a bit stressed, you know, from being hungry. I was expecting to see like stress numbers, but it was really, really calm. So that's probably a good way to get calm to do the fasting. Stay well if as much as you can from ultra-processed food, you know, eat whole foods instead. It's everything that we know, but when you see the result, it's so much easier to do what we know we should do. Other than that, exercise, we should do some endurance training, at least maybe a couple of hours a week. That should be enough. You shouldn't train too hard either. So there's like a dose response curve. So very little training and a lot of training is both detrimental to our health. Make sure we get some muscles, do some squats, push-ups, sit-ups, and just some the easiest ones. Using the muscles will release the brain neurotrophic factor, which will help the brain connections. And you should move throughout the day. If you have an office job, you should move maybe every hour, every half hour to get the blood flow and the lymphatic system to get rid of the waste products from the cell work throughout the day.
Yeah,
So,
I'm a huge fan of easy, quote unquote, it's not even cardio, but going for walks is like for me, number one is a therapy. Number two, a way to do some zone two, let's say, cardiovascular activity, and also just after meals, that I really feel like it helps me digest very well also. So I'm a huge fan of that, or just in general, people having standing desks. I think if you are tied to your desk all day long and you don't have the opportunity to go for a walk after your meals or so, at least for an hour or two standing up, I do think that that's quite beneficial. And going back to the point of sleep also. So I used to work shift work. I used to be a police officer, and I really, it really affected my body and my mind in a very negative way after a while doing all the shift work. And so since then, sleep has become a very big priority of mine. And just the benefit of having a steady bedtime and rising time, like more or less the same, maybe like ha plus or half an hour or whatever, or an hour on the weekends. Yeah, that's okay. But generally speaking, having a set bedtime and maybe an hour or two starting my wind down process, this has been like, it sounds so simple and boring, but it's honestly life and sleep changing. So yeah.
Absolutely. And you don't have to do anything. You just have to allow your body to do its work, what it's made for. So it's that's the first one that people should do, make sure they get enough sleep. And for the next one, you need to find some way to relax. And that can be through breath work, meditation, but it can also be cold, like a cold shower, cold plunges. That's maybe a bit hard to do in Colombia, but easier in Norway and in Germany where you're from. But it could also be enough just to have it on the cold shower. Maybe in Colombia, if you just have it on the coldest part there, it could be enough. And then just have the shower maybe a little bit longer. It will cool you down and put you into the parasympathetic state, which is why so many athletes use the cold to dampen inflammation that will come from too much training. And then of course for women, to understand the menstrual cycle, to understand the PMS or PMDD, which is a more serious part of PMS, where it's like you get really sick, maybe you can't go to work and so on. And when you see that on your wearables, you're able to mitigate the stress and flatten the curve so that you can don't need you don't have to have these PMS symptoms. The PMS symptoms is a sign that you are too stressed, that there's too much cortisol affecting the progesterone and affecting the female hormones, and disturbing the menstrual cycle, giving you PMS, increasing the chances of getting endometriosis and polycystic ovarian syndrome, and many other things.
Yeah,
So
for me, it
particularly for women,
personally,
I think is important.
I personally found it just super helpful in understanding my cycle better. So, like, of course, when just before we get our period and progesterone drops, sleep would always be terrible. And before that, I would never like really know when that was going to come or why I slept so poorly. And then I was like, oh yeah, okay, I can see the pattern now and kind of do something about it as well. Maybe pull back specifically on those days or so. So yeah, definitely a really good point in helping us understand ourselves better. And as it pertains to the calm down practice, I honestly think that that's probably what people nowadays struggle the most with, implementing something like that on a regular basis. Because I often hear, oh, well, I go to yoga once a week or once every 2 weeks, or I've been on a hike this month. I'm like, okay, cool. But what do you do on a daily basis to bring your stress down? And so I'm a big fan of breath work and not even having like a huge breath work session. It doesn't need to be half an hour of doing your breath work. Even just like you're sitting in traffic and you're noticing yourself getting aroused or annoyed by something and starting to be upset, and then taking a few really deep, long exhales and just being like, okay, why is this even bothering me? I'm not in any danger. Okay, let go. And
Yeah.
it can be as simple as that. And I think that's often a lot more effective than doing a yoga retreat once a year. I mean, that's great, go for it. But like, yeah, it's not going to do the same thing.
I agree. And I probably do like two or three deep breaths like 100 times a day. You know, so I'm always aware of it, that this is something I can do for a short time, just while I'm doing something, making food or talking to you. Like now, often if you talk, I breathe slowly, you know. So I'm very watchful of these things. So if I'm on a phone call, I breathe slowly when the other one is talking. So often when you do this, it becomes automatic, and then you're able to do the set. You're able to perform just as well or even better with a lower heart rate, because when you have a high heart rate, when you are stressed, your prefrontal cortex is not performing at its optimum. So you need to stay calm to make use of our human brain. And this is kind of and you know, I call it in the book the inner living fossil, because this is the base of our brain that we share with all vertebrates that we separated from evolutionary hundreds of millions of years ago. But this part of our brain is still there and is still working more or less exactly the same way as 100 million years ago. And we need to take more consideration to that. And when we do that, our human modern brain works a lot better. So that is why it's important to keep calm and have these strategies to calm yourself down.
And I truly think that often we're not even aware of what stresses us out so much. So, for example, many households, they have the TV on in the background or the radio on the entire time, or you live somewhere where on a very busy street and you don't actually notice how much that's affecting you, or your cell phone, you have notifications on. So all the time it's like bing, 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 bing. And you think it's not bothering you, but generally that often means our nervous system is just so exposed the whole time and like on attention, as opposed to going about all this a lot more consciously and being like, okay, now I'm sitting down, I'm watching TV, I'm enjoying it for half an hour, done. I'm turning off my notifications, I'm responding when I can and when I want to, and not when other people just constantly want me to react. And so that sort of expectations that unfortunately a lot of workplaces, I believe, have from us as nowadays, or maybe that we think the workplace or other people have from us nowadays. I think that's really something where if we just did an inventory once where we're like, I'm sitting down, I'm going to write down all the small things that I think might be elevating my heart rate, or using the heart rate monitor to see like, oh, okay, I've just had a half an hour of a text message exchange and it really annoyed me or aggravated me. Maybe I shouldn't do that anymore. Maybe I should go for a walk first and then respond calmly or whatever. I think that can be really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we're often doing something a little bit all the time. So it's like we're simmering, like if we're not really turned off, it's like on your stove that we are on number one or two. We're not on number five necessarily, but we're not really turned totally off that we need to do. And when we put these watches and wearables on hunter-gatherers, we can see that they are in a moderate activity 2 or 3 hours a day. There's the time they're relaxing, really relaxing. So we're not constructed for this speed. And that will have an effect on our immune system. And the heart rate variability is connected to the state of our immune system. So it's a very, very important metric. And if you Google like any disease or condition or symptom more or less, and you couple it with heart rate variability, you will see so much research on this. So because it's such an easy metric to get for your research. So it's really, really interesting. And this is a kind of a metric that you have control of yourself, because this is a quite big shift in the healthcare system, because it's a shift from waiting until you get sick and started to treat you with medicines, and until being on the front side of the disease and avoiding getting sick. But it's also from the healthcare system and the doctor, and you put the power into your own hands. So you have the control instead of that the doctor have all the answers. So it's really, I think, in my mind, I might be biased, of course, but this, in my mind, for the modern day stress diseases, this is as important as antibiotics for infectious diseases. This is what can solve the stress diseases and get it under your control, because it certainly is out of control. And particularly because the stress comes from, like nutrition, being in a poor fitness level, having a low VO2 max, maybe 28 or 30, where you should have 35 or 40. I think it's a really, really important measurement.
I think that the picture that you're painting in the sense of it being empowerment for each patient and or for each person is a wonderful picture. You're actually having me reevaluate taking my Oura Ring back out of the closet, although I don't have it here. It's in Germany, but no, it's a very good point for it. I'm curious about one last thing, and if that is also mentioned in your book in the part of relaxation. I believe there's more and more research also coming out about the benefits in terms of relaxation of human interaction, right? Like we're also hypothetically we're connected, but we're not really collected. We're all really isolated. And I mean, just in the sense of like happiness, research and so on, everything showing that if we have loved ones around us or more in-person interactions or even with a dog or like something like that, that oxytocin that we get from physical touch as well. Is that something that you have witnessed on your wearables as well?
Yes, absolutely. Not so much on my, and because we're all different. So I'm quite similar, no matter what happens. I'm very boring, emotionally when it comes to these things. But so many people, and that's very interesting, people who are introverts that have been thinking that I should keep more to myself, being with others is stressful. And then they see that, no, it's not right. I can see that my heart rate and heart rate variability is better when I'm social, and it's worse when I'm alone. And then they kind of gave themselves permission to be more social, and they became better. So what our minds expect, is coloring our experience, and then our body's reactions can be very different. So yes, good relations have a huge impact. I've seen even that husbands of the women with the PMS symptoms have the same dip at the same time as the women, and people, so many people can say that, okay, I was considering divorce for some time, and then I decided to divorce, and my HRV got better, after the decision. Trying to find the decision was harder and tougher for them than making the decision. They could see the drop, or the improvement in heart rate variability. These kind of things happen. And people see that when I work with this colleague, I'm stressed. If I do exactly the same work with this other colleague, I'm not stressed. And they have either asked to change who they're working with, or if they can't, just to take it upon themselves to deal with that in a better way once they can see the result and are able to regulate their reaction to it. Because it's not just as Hans Selye, the inventor of the stress concept, in the 50s or 70s, I don't remember. He said that it's not the stress that is killing us, it's our response to the stress. Even if somebody wants to annoy you, you don't have to be annoyed. You choose whether an annoying person is going to make you feel annoyed or not. So that's very important.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Torkil Faro, I'm so grateful for your time. You've painted a wonderful picture for heart rate, very heart rate monitors in general. I'm going to put into the show links your links, but of course, also the link to the Pulse Cure. Everybody go and grab it. And I just want to thank you for your time and for sharing your wisdom with us.
Yeah, thank you for coming here. And I would also like to say that the book is also an audiobook, that you can get. Maybe it would be hard to get to Colombia or if you're some other places in the world. But the audiobook, of course, is two touches away.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Feru. Thank you for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And one more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.